Okay, I think I'm on now. Good. All right. Walking in vanity. You guys are familiar with the term diss track? A diss track is a song that's written to insult someone else, someone that you're mad at, that you want to let them know how awful they are. Well, in 1972, a singer named Carly Simon sat down to write a song, and she was angry as she was writing this song. Someone had hurt her, and so she sat down, and the song that she wrote, she could have written, "You're so ugly," or "You're so stupid," but she settled on "You're so vain." You may be familiar with this song. It's sort of catchy. You're so vain. You probably think this song is about you. You're so vain. You're so vain. And the song rocketed up the charts. And it was catchy, but the reason that it was such a popular song was everybody was asking the same question. Who is she talking about? This was the ultimate insult. You're so vain. You're so worthless. There's nothing weighty about you. You're full of yourself, and everyone can see it. You're so vain. In fact, it was such a question that she had dated several people, and everybody was, what, is this James Taylor? Is it Warren Beatty? All kinds of names were swirling around. They didn't have the internet then, but swirling around the popular culture, to the point that she finally held an auction in which she, for the right price, would whisper in the ear of one person who she was talking about on the condition that they could never tell anybody. So Dick Ebersol, one of the executives from NBC, paid $50,000 to have her whisper in his ear, "Who was so vain?" Interesting, isn't it? Well, Paul here gives her the inspiration. He says, "You are so vain," speaking of the world apart from Christ. You're so vain. It's empty. It's worthless. Your pursuits are really going nowhere. They're going to evaporate as the boiling pot of water. You're frail. You're aimless. You're fragile. He's specifically thinking about the vanity of our minds, your thoughts. And then he proceeds next in the next couple of verses in one of the most searing condemnations that could possibly be written. Verses 18 and 19 are just damning in their searing condemnation. You're so vain. And so as we go through these verses, let me say this is the $50,000 question. As we think through this, you need to be thinking this thought: is Paul talking about me? Am I so vain? And so Paul unwraps what it means to be so vain in our thinking, the vanity of your mind, by really giving three levels of vain thinking. He's going to speak about vain purposes and vain desires, and then vain relationships. All of chapter 4 is in the context of human relationships. So what is vain thinking? What is this "you're so vain"? It is vain purposes, vain desires, and vain relationships. First of all, vain purposes in verse 18. Here's a question for you. Is there or does the transcendent exist in your life? And you may be thinking, what a weird question. What I mean is there something bigger than just the normal human experience that drives you, that moves you, that compels your thoughts, that inspires your actions? Is there the transcendent in your life? So to illustrate the lack of the transcendent, something bigger, something more than just me and my experience and what I see and what I like, Paul says there must be the transcendent. There must be something bigger to give purpose that's not vain. Now, to illustrate the vanity of modern purpose or the lack of purpose, there was a video that made this way around a few months ago during all the university protests back last spring about the Israeli-Gaza conflict. So there was this one video in which there were college students protesting at New York University, and the TV interviewer caught up with two girls, two college girls. They had bussed in from a long distance to go to New York University to protest this Israeli-Gaza conflict and how the university was handling it. And so the interviewer, these girls are holding signs, they've been screaming and hollering, they're sweating, they've been busily and heartily protesting all day long. And he says, "So tell me, what are you protesting?" And the one girl, she says, "Well, we just want the university to stop." And then she stops, and her mind is spinning, and she turns to her friend and she says, "Well, what are they doing? What are we protesting?" And her friend says, "Well, I just wish we were better educated." So they're protesting heartily, but they have no idea what they're protesting apart. This is a vain purpose. They don't have anything to bolster, to give weight to what they're doing. And Paul says this is the problem. Verse 18, having the understanding darkened. We just don't know. We don't know why we're doing what we're doing. We don't know what should move us. And he says, we just don't know. There is ignorance. Having the understanding darkened. Why? Because you are alienated or separated from the life of God. Here's the transcendence. Paul says, when there is separation from the life of God and ignorance of the life that is in God, the ignorance that is in them, separated from God, then the understanding is darkened. There is no weighty purpose. And so understand this. This is Paul's declaration. If your thoughts aren't centered around God, if there's not the transcendent, you go, what do you mean by transcendent? Here's what I mean by that in a practical way. When you rise in the morning and you see the sunrise, do you think, my God, how great thou art? You're amazing. Your ability to bring this beauty to bear and to hold the planets in orbit. Lord, you are amazing. Now, Lord, help me to now go out and live my life today in a way that honors the beauty of the sun that is rising upon this day. Or do you wake in the morning and you see the sunrise and you go, well, it's not going to rain today. I don't need a jacket. Okay, so what does the glory of God in your environment, what does it compel you to do, or does it compel you to do nothing? And Paul says, if God is not in the center of this, then you are vain. You are so vain. So, vain purposes. Then he moves to vain desires. And here's what he says. He says, if there is no transcendent, if there is no transcendent that gives rise to purpose, then purposes and desires are just mixed into one. Your purpose becomes your desire. What you desire becomes your all-encompassing purpose, what drives you, what moves you. Now, we all have desires, right? To be human is to have desires. And having desires, we have to figure out what to do with them, how much weight to give them, how much prominence to give them. And so here's what Paul says about those with vain desires. Because there is no acknowledgement of God, these purposes and desires come into one. And here's the root cause. Listen in verse 18. Having the understanding darkened, being alienated from the life of God through the ignorance that is in them because of, here's the problem, because of the blindness of their heart. The word blindness really means the hardness of their heart. So it's not like there's no awareness of the Almighty, of the transcendent of God, but there is the lack of concern for the Almighty. They don't want the Almighty to bring to be in their thoughts. I don't want to think about God. I want what I want. So the heart is blinded or hardened to right desires, the desire to worship, to sacrifice, to share, to give. Because I want what I want. Paul says in verse 22, you are driven by these deceitful lusts. Driven by these deceitful lusts. Notice that he calls them deceitful. What I desire is pursued with abandon, But it's deceitful. It's vain. So, for example, what if I could award you today a free weekend, 72 hours, where you are completely free to do whatever you want to do? I've had a few of those in my life. My wife goes out of town, have a free weekend, no obligations. Can I just tell you that it's super exciting in the first 3 hours? And then super depressing in the last 69 hours? When you just gorge on, I'm just going to watch movies for 72 hours. And you watch the same movie 4 times and you're like, I am so depressed. Right? So it's deceitful. The desires don't produce what we expect them to produce, but they still deceive us. And here he moves on in verse 19. Listen to this. As we give in to our desires, as we're driven by desires, listen to what he says. He says, it will inevitably spiral out of control. If we live our lives only pursuing, only driven by what feels good, by what I want, it will inevitably, surely spiral out of control. Verse 19, who, being past feeling, eventually, he says, you will lose the sensitivity that should be natural to you. You will become calloused. And here's what happens as vain people become calloused, who, being past feeling, have given themselves. That phrase is a powerful phrase. It really means to betray oneself. Now, it's one thing to betray somebody else, to not keep a secret that somebody confided in you. That's one bad thing. But it's another level to betray yourself, to become something that is a betrayal to who you are, who, being past feeling, have given themselves, betrayed themselves over unto lasciviousness. So one has made themselves the willing slave, betrayed themselves, given themselves over to slavery, to lasciviousness. This word just means self-abandon. Abandoning of the self. The loss of control over oneself. Usually indulged in sexual pleasure. To pursue pleasure with reckless abandon, unrestrained by convention or morality, where we take the good gifts that God has given us and we gorge on it to the excess, to the destruction of the very thing that we are seeking to please. In other words, we are destroying ourselves. That's what it means to be vain. Where desires become so prominent that we abandon all we know to be true and right, we betray ourselves, and then we find ourselves becoming slaves to that which is betraying us, and yet we continue to pursue it with abandon, reckless abandon. Here's what he says: to work all uncleanness with greediness. So it doesn't stop. Betrayed myself, but I want more and more and more and more. And Paul would say to this, this is so vain. And then he moves to vain relationships. So vain purposes, there is no transcendent. Vain desires, I just serve what I want. And then vain relationships. Relationships are who we do life with and how we approach life with others. And this whole chapter is in the context of human relationships that God has made. And this chapter is both a description of profitable relationships where people are working together to build one another up, to be like Christ. And then the back half of the chapter is this. People are stealing from one another and lying to one another and taking from one another and pursuing pleasure, sexual pleasure with greediness that always ends in the hurt of another. And they're angry and they're bitter and their relationships are filled with wrath and anger and evil speaking and malice. You see, Paul says that a vain purpose and vain desires will always lead to destroyed relationships. So the life that has been given to us to live with one another for the good and mutual edification of one another, we end up hurting other people. And he says, this is so vain. Your relationship with God is alienated, and relationship with others is corrupted. And Paul, as he would look out across the Gentile world, says, this is the Gentile world. This is the world without Christ. Now, let me tell you, Paul's condemnation of the Gentile world in Ephesus would also be Paul's condemnation of the world without Christ here in America today. He would say, this is so vain. The purposes are vain. The desires are vain. The relationships are breaking and broken. This is so vain. And so young people, as you ask yourself the question, the $50,000 question, is he talking about me? Maybe, hopefully, my prayer is you're answering, no, that's not my life. I am driven by the transcendent. I am driven, compelled by the glory of God. I battle my desires because I love God more than I love myself. I'm working to build growing relationships. I'm not seeking to destroy relationships. I hope that's your answer, but it might not be. It's helpful to look into your relationships and see, where is my life really? What's my relationships with my parents? Or with my friends? Well, it's very, very important to understand what vain living looks like. And so let's think for a little while about the vain life here today in our world that we live in. And I want to talk to you about two things. The dominant doctrine of the day, and then the dominant driver of vain doctrine. So the dominant vain doctrine, and then the dominant driver of this vain thinking. Okay? So just stay with me for a few minutes as I think about this. Now the dominant doctrine is in regards to who we are, our purposes, our desires, who we are. Now I've talked about this before here, and I'm going to lean on this man that has written much about this, Carl Truman, and I'm just going to do this very quickly, okay? So listen up. Here's the dominant doctrine about who we are today. Number one, there is the absence of the transcendent. Would you agree with that? God is not a major factor in people's thinking. There's been a full rejection of God, of His existence, of His authority, of His goodness, of His glory in our world today. So what does a world look like where there is the absence of the transcendent? Here's what it looks like. So here is the understanding of what it means to be human. I am free and I am autonomous. Autonomous just means I don't need anybody to govern me. I don't need anybody to tell me what to do. I don't need any authority over me. So without the transcendent, we eliminate the authority. So I am free, and I can govern myself. Now, what about life's purpose? Life's purpose is about attaining happiness, a sense of inner well-being, contentment. What is life about? I just want to be happy. Okay? That's the purpose of life without the transcendent. Well, how do you get to that purpose? And here's the dominant thinking. What's the path to the purpose of happiness? How do you get to happiness? Here's where happiness is found. Happiness is found by me being able to listen to and live out my feelings and my intuitions. I need to be able to just be who I am. I need to be able to be authentic. And whatever I feel to be inside, let me be that. Let me be free. Let me be answerable to no one. Let me be the master of my own destiny. And there should be no accountability to any objective moral standard that would be opposed to what I want to be, what I want to do. That's the dominant thinking, okay? That's all we're going to say about that. But that's what the world believes about who we are as humans. We're free, Happiness is the goal. There is no higher authority. We are our own governors. And the greatest path, the real path to happiness is just being you and letting your feelings and desires take control. Well, that's the dominant philosophy. We know that already. We may quickly reject that as being unbiblical, but it is very attractive to our nature, is it not? Just let me alone. Just let me be me. Just let me be happy. Well, let's think now about the dominant driver. What is driving this? What is the dominant driver of the world's vain thinking? And the answer to that is technology, right? Technology. Technology is the Swiss Army knife of the age. I mean your device. I mean your phone. It's our, think about this, it's our educator, Siri. Where's Alaska? It's our constant companion. Do you ever lose your phone and go, oh my goodness, where is my phone? And almost feel naked? It's our scheduler. It's our comforter much of the time. I was talking to somebody yesterday. They said, you know, when I just get peopled out, I just have to go and get my phone for a while. It's our entertainer. It's our shopping mall. It's our means of communication. And it's the way that we largely do relationships. And we can build this world around ourselves. I can get the apps that I want, that I am attracted to. I can build my own world with my device. And that's my little insular world. Well, here's the question. What does life look like? What does life look like? And so there's a book that's very popular right now. It's written by an atheist, a social psychologist, and a professor. His name is Jonathan Haidt. It's a very important book in our day, I think. It's called The Anxious Generation: How the Great Rewiring of Childhood is Causing an Epidemic of Mental Illness. So here was his thesis. He wanted to understand, what does this world look like? What does the world look like when we are plugged in all the time? What does it look like when the real world becomes farther and farther away and the virtual world becomes much more a part of our world? What does it look like for a completely new world experience that adults and youth together have plunged into? What does it look like to be online all the time? What does it look like to live in a world with smartphones and social media and like buttons and front-facing cameras and the retweet button and notifications that lead us around like lemmings, right? Oh, my phone just buzzed. My watch just buzzed. I better check this. What does this look like? What does it look like for you to get an update? And, you know, you got to get your updates on your phone. And the update has been engineered by the company who has been studying how you look at social media. It's studying, what do you hover over? And as you hover over this kind of a thing, they say, you know what? Here's what we're going to do. We're going to start plugging in whatever you're attracted to. Maybe it's fight scenes, a fight at school. We're going to plug in that fight scene, but we're not going to do it every video. We're going to intersperse it about every 10 to 15 videos so that you will just keep scrolling thinking, okay, it's about to come, it's about to come, it's about to come. And then you hit it and you have this little dopamine rush and then you keep scrolling some more. What does a world like that look like? And here's what he found. These are just some numbers. But these numbers say this is so vain. And just to help you with the numbers, here's just a quick math lesson. I'm not great at math, so maybe a little bit off. But I'm about 5'9" tall. If I were to grow 10%, I'd be about 6'3 or 6'4. That would be huge for me. But if I were to grow 145%, I would be like 8.5 feet tall. Okay? So here's the numbers. Among teens since 2010, depression has risen 145% in girls and 161% in boys. For college students, anxiety risen 134%. Anorexia up 100%. Schizophrenia 67%. Adolescent self-harm in girls up 188%. In boys, 48%. Adolescent suicide up in boys 91% and in girls 167%. That's pretty sad, isn't it? It's stunning. This world that's designed to say you can have what you want. You can chase your desires and have your desires leads to, he says, suicide among adolescents, not teenagers, but adolescents, up 167% among girls. 91% among boys. And then he talks about this. He talks about sociogenic epidemics. That's kind of a big word, but you're familiar with it. If one person whispers to another right now, I think I'm about to throw up. And then that person whispers that to another person, and it makes its way to the back of the room. You know what happens? We all start feeling queasy, right? Or, taken a different way, if one person comes here with a really cool mullet, I think it happened last year. Look how many mullets are here today. Isn't that true? So people are driven by what seems to be popular or what seems to be something remarkable. So here's a few examples. In Germany, they had this major outbreak of Tourette's syndrome. People coming to the doctor saying, I have, you know, Tourette's is that thing where you have a tick or maybe a yelp, a noise. And hundreds and hundreds of German young people are coming to the doctor evidencing symptoms of Tourette's. It turned out that hardly any of them actually had Tourette's, but they really believed they had Tourette's because there was a major TikTok influencer who had Tourette's and everybody was wired into him. The same thing occurring with multiple personality disorders. Millions of people locked in on TikTok to these influencers with multiple personality disorders are displaying this, and all of a sudden people are flocking to the doctor saying, I believe I have a multiple personality disorder. You go, that's crazy. Well, who about 8 years ago ever got in front of a camera and started doing, right? And then all of a sudden it's an epidemic. Right? Because you saw somebody doing it. You go, wow, that's cool. I want to do the same thing. And this happens consciously, of course, and it happens subconsciously. So, for example, I heard a testimony of a man just last week. This is just one man's testimony, but he said this. He said, I was convinced for 4 years that I was transgender. I was a woman trapped in a man's body, and I was miserable, and I was getting ready to go ahead and do the steps to make that transition complete. And then he said, I got off, not on purpose, but I got off social media for 1 month, and all those desires went away. Interesting, isn't it? Well, let's think about this for a minute in terms of girls and boys. Men and women are created differently. Let's think about girls for a minute. Girls have been created as relational beings. God made Eve for Adam to exist in relationship. Women are gifted to relate to one another, to bring warmth and nurturing and relation to the world. Praise God for the creation of females who are gifted in being able to relate, to bring warmth, to bring nurturing, to bring joy, to bring love to this earth. And this man shows that social media in particular, relationship media, right, is particularly damaging to young ladies. So let's think about it for a minute. What do you do on social media? Well, first of all, you post content. You post content, and the next thing you do is check the post to see how the content is received. Is it liked? Is it shared? Is it approved? Is it complimented? You post the content, and then you wait for judgment. Do you think that's very healthy for your soul? Or you scroll content. And in scrolling content, you're asking this question. You are saying, how do I measure up to the content that I see? How do I compare? How do I relate? And the reality is with filters and just life, it's impossible to measure up. And then there, of course, is the desire to be accepted and to achieve. And this is meant for many young ladies that they have become more and more and more willing to do more and more and more extreme things to find acceptance and achievement. Meanwhile, the satisfaction with themselves has plummeted into great depression and dissatisfaction with life. Boys are different. Boys aren't that drawn to social media. Boys have been created by God to protect, to build, to provide, to be visionary, to lead. That's how we're wired. God made us that way on purpose, to be able to bring order and structure to His world, to have dominion over this earth, to lead, to love, to care. But what's happened with boys across this vain world is that boys have retreated into a self-contained world that has effectively neutered them. So boys aren't so drawn to social media, but boys are drawn to things like being plunged into gaming. And in the gaming, most of the time, the gaming that has addicted boys is gaming that mimics what we are created to do. Mimics building and creating and fighting and warring and conquering. But it's not happening in real life. Or being plunged into a world of online porn, unable and unwilling to have relationships in the real world because you can get the benefits of a relationship without actually having to relate. This is so vain. It's so vain. It's empty. But young people, listen to this. Verse 20, Ephesians 4. But ye have not so learned Christ. Here is this world that is vain, that is perishing, that has offered all and given nothing. And then he says this, but ye have not so learned Christ. What he's saying is that there is a life that's not vain. There's a life that's different. And this life is found in Jesus Christ. He says, if so be that ye have heard Him and have been taught by Him as the truth is in Jesus. So these people in Ephesus had not actually met Jesus. They had not actually seen Jesus, but they had heard Jesus. They had been taught by Him. They had been taught by Jesus. In other words, they had been brought into a relationship with Jesus Christ, and in Jesus Christ, they had found a life that was not vain. A life where desires don't destroy but inform. A life of satisfied and healthy relationships is found in Jesus Christ. So let's just think about Jesus for a few minutes before we close. Who is Jesus? And what about Jesus gives life purpose and meaning that is not vain? Who is Jesus? Well, friends, Jesus is not virtual. Jesus is real. He's a real person, real human being that came to help real people in real need. Jesus is the transcendent God taken on flesh. He is God and He is man. He is the Son of God and the Son of man. And Jesus Christ, as the God-man, He came to this earth and He lived. Yes, He died at the end, but He lived. And His life is meant to inform us. Oh, what a life He lived. When He was 12 years old, He was already busy on mission. He was already busy on task. He was teaching. He was learning. He was healing. He was feeding. He was loving. He was living with people. He was informing. He was instructing. Oh, what a life He lived. He was seeking. He was saving. He was coming to call sinners to repentance. He was living this life of incredible purpose. He was driven. Let's look at the person of Jesus as a man. There's nothing about His life that says vain, is it? But it says everything about being on mission, the great mission to accomplish. But then Jesus died. Jesus died on a cross. He died on the cross because the condemnation for vanity is the wrath of God. The wrath of God is poured out against vain thinking. This is not what you were made for. You were not created to live life according to your own desires with no purpose, but you were created to live life filled with the purpose of loving and glorifying and honoring God. But none of us have done that. And so Jesus dies on mission to bear the wrath of God, to redeem people who are under the wrath of God for their vain thinking. And He purchases on his, by his offering, our redemption from this vain life and the condemnation that is there for it. But then Jesus rose again. This is the gospel. Jesus came, Jesus died, Jesus rose again, and Jesus rose again for this purpose. He rose to free us from the vanity of our living and our thinking, to begin building a kingdom in which He is taking vain people and giving their life worth and giving their life meaning in relationship with Him to the glory of God by building a kingdom that cannot be moved and a kingdom that will not fail. And so this is the work, verse 23, of renewal in our minds that needs to occur. We need to learn, we need to hear, we need to learn from Jesus. And so very quickly, let me just talk about those three things: purpose, desires, and relationships, and learn from Jesus. Jesus' purpose was very clear. Hebrews 10, I come to do thy will, O my God. He was about the Father's will. The Father's will. He was so much about the Father's will that when it was the Father's will that He would go and give His life, He would die when He had not sinned, He would die when He had lived a perfect life, that He still surrendered to the Father's will, even though it cost Him His own life and the greatest suffering that's ever been endured. Because Jesus was fixed. He was all about the Father's will. No individual has ever lived with a clear purpose. And so, brothers and sisters, if you are in Jesus Christ, you have been created after the image of God in righteousness and true holiness. You have been created at the image of God to take on Jesus Christ and to begin to resemble Jesus Christ. This is the whole goal of Ephesians 4, that you might grow into the stature of the measure of the fullness of Christ, that you would put away the deceitful lust and you would put away all the swirling winds of doctrine, that you might speak the truth in love and grow up into Him which in all things, which is the head, even Christ, that you would become like Christ. Can you see that? What a glorious purpose. That the perfect One who came and showed the glory of God and died in my stead and rose again to give me life has now come to dwell within me to give me the purpose to look like Him, to be like Him, to love like Him, to serve like Him, to love the Lord like Him. Jesus Christ has come into your lives if you are dwelling in Him by faith, that you might be a man and a woman of great purpose. Do you live with that purpose? This is why I live, to glorify God. I come to do thy will, O God, just like Jesus. This is the only life that's not vain. A life that says, I come to do thy will, O God, just like Jesus, no matter what the cost here in this life. That's the real purpose, the weighty purpose. Secondly, the desires. This is very important you understand this. Jesus' desires were controlled by His purpose. So important to understand that. His purpose was to do thy will, O God. So therefore, Jesus, bearing this great weight of His suffering, would say these words, listen, not my will, but thine be done. Young people, true life is found in accepting the reality that my default desires are not always right. And I cannot be governed by my desires. There will always be a battleground in our hearts with desires. And the goal, as we see the purpose that swallows up our desires, what happens is when we begin to live with our purpose as our controlling factor, what happens is that our desires begin to be transformed and conformed into the image of Jesus Christ. Listen to the last few verses. Here's what it says. The last few verses of Ephesians 4 says this: those people who used to be liars because they were greedy for their own desires, they didn't mind deceiving others because they wanted their desire above all others, those people have stopped lying And instead of lying, they are speaking the truth because they understand that we are members one of another. And they have stopped stealing because their desires are not the dominant thing. Their purpose to glorify God becomes dominant. And so now they are working to give because Jesus gave so well. These people who are shriveled up by bitterness and anger and wrath and malice and all the wrong that's been done to them no longer are doing that, but instead they are tender-hearted towards those they are in conflict with because God, for Christ's sake, hath forgiven them. Desires being transformed through the purpose of loving like Jesus and being like Jesus. And then finally, relationships. Jesus Christ, His relationship with the Father, the Spirit, is that of legend. There was no more glorious relationship than that in the Trinity. But friends, Jesus Christ has proven how relational, how perfect His relationships are by coming to earth and dying for the ungodly, bringing us into His fold, making us His friends, loving us like we are His brethren, because we are. So let me just say this. In this vain world that's mostly fake, your life will be found in relationships. This chapter is all about, this whole book really is all about relationships. He mentioned it earlier. And so I want to implore you to, like Jesus, plunge into real relationships. Start serving right now. Start conversing with others, old people, young people. Start conversing right now. Start forming desires to be married and raise children in the nurture and the atmosphere of the Lord right now. Life, true life, meaningful life, is found in real relationships where love and forgiveness and mercy and service is found. So what about you? Are you so vain? Is this song about you? It probably is for all of us, at least practically, in ways that we would be embarrassed to admit. Can I tell you what the answer is? Repentance. Acknowledge, I'm vain. And this vanity is as corrupt as Paul said. Paul wasn't wrong. He wasn't just angry writing about a jilted lover. He was writing truth. Can I tell you this? Jesus Christ is not vain. Jesus Christ says to vain people, you come to me. You take my yoke upon you, and you'll find rest for your souls. May God bless you is my prayer.